Hello, everyone. We are your hosts, Susan and Jill. We are longtime educators who are here to share with you all things education. We want to inspire you, help you innovate, dream new visions, and best of all, make you laugh. The education field is not an easy one, but we do it because we love kids and we want the very best for them. Join us as we laugh, learn, and get schooled with Kale Education and Company. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode with Get Schooled with Kale Education and Company. I'm so excited about today's interview. I've been waiting. I think we've tried, I don't know how many times, to connect, and we're finally connecting today. And I just feel like I need to like have wine with you over Zoom so that we can like make this like a really cool, official, conversation. I have Amber Parks with me today, and she does writing. And we're just not talking about writing enough. And so many teachers ask about it. What do I do? How do I do it? What do I do in the classroom? And so this magical conversation is going to give you answers to lots of those things and give you some really great resources to turn to. So before we get started on all of that, Amber is going to share a story. Amber, we start all of our shows with something funny because, as it turns out, lots of funny things happen multiple times per day in education. And sometimes it's just good to remember the funny and laugh for a moment because some days the jobs can be hard. And it's good to just sit and laugh. So if you will share a story with us from your background, we would love that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, we all need to laugh as much as we can as educators. And so my story comes from my very first year teaching in Oklahoma. I moved to Oklahoma after losing my home in Gulfport, Mississippi with Hurricane Katrina. So it was not a planned move, but I had fallen in love with a cowboy and ended up in the middle of nowhere. I affectionately say that, in the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma. And my first teaching job here was in a little town. Now it's spelled A-L-E-X, so you would think it's pronounced Alex, but it is not. It is pronounced Ellick. And so I taught in Ellick, Oklahoma. And I was teaching third grade, and my class won a singing competition to win tickets to see The Incredibles on Ice at the state fair. We're a very rural district. I was one of two third grade teachers in a district that only had one teacher per grade level, and I was the overflow teacher. We won these tickets. We went to see the show, and it truly was incredible. The Incredibles is a fantastic storyline, and my students were just enthralled by the explosions, and they were on ice and doing all these flips, and just it was a beautiful, beautiful show. Something that they really could remember, especially with just the limited life experiences that a lot of my students had. So we, because writing's so important to me, we of course came back and we were writing narratives about it. And I really work with students on finding from a shared experience, right? So we all went to this show, but finding within there, what are really special moments for you that you want to elaborate on and write more about and create the experience of your narrative with. And so I had one student, his name is Bailey, and he was 8 going on 18. He had an ear pierced, and he would come in with his arm all covered in temporary tattoos. And he was just the cool kid in the class, you know, in terms of just being too cool for school almost. Right. And so at that point within the year, I taught them how to have less on their outlines, on their mind design draft. So just to save their writing stamina for the actual writing of the piece. So I got to his second moment. The first one was about the explosions in the show and how neat they were, which happened early in the show. And then the second moment, all it said was bathroom as the moment. And then the two elaborations were toilet and sink. And I thought, okay, I better have a little conference time with Mr. Bailey here and double check. So I said, hey Bailey, come over here and just tell me, just write out loud, which just is a way of saying, talk out your writing, write out loud your second moment for me. I want to hear what you're going to talk about. And he said, Miss Parks. So when I was in the bathroom and I behaved the way I was supposed to, when I finished, he said, that toilet, it flushed all by itself. He said, and then I went out to the sink and I put my hands under it and it turned on, and I put my hands out and it went off, and I put my hands under and it went on. He said, Mrs. Parks, it was part of the show.
Oh, I love it. It extended so into the bathroom.
So excited about the bathroom. And so I said, you know what, Bailey, this is going to be a fabulous story. I cannot wait for you to to write it out. And sure enough, when they got to share their stories for the whole class, he was so proud of himself and several other students. Yeah, Bailey, I agree. The bathroom was so neat. So,
oh my gosh.
Share it's that story the little things, narrative.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you think the show is going to be the big thing, but no, just the, just
the
a different kind of bathroom, right? Oh my gosh.
This is great. It's just, 2007. So it was very
kind of new
technology at that point. And, literally our school was in between pastures of cattle and our building looked like it was a metal barn. So, I mean, these children, they could do anything on a farm,
absolutely.
But going to the city and having automatic toilets and sinks was just so absolutely mind blowing.
Oh my gosh.
It's
I love
just
that.
An endearing little story.
I love that moment for all kinds of reasons. That is fantastic. Really, really great. Okay. So give us your background, your journey. It's amazing. And so I want them to soak up all the pieces and all that you have to offer.
Yeah, thank you. So I truly feel, Steve Jobs said it best, that you can really connect the dots looking back, right? Yeah. It's hard to connect dots looking forward, but certainly when you look back at what's already happened, you see so many amazing dots that connected. And so I always like to say I'm a teacher on a mission, even though I am in an administrator role with the school district in Oklahoma and also the director now of Writing with Design. And I really still forever am a teacher and a teacher on a mission to really improve the quality and caliber of writing across our country. Mm-hmm. And that really stemmed really from being on the other side of the desk as a student. So my story really begins in eighth grade when my mother was my US history teacher. And she put up a competition in the classroom and it was to write about what democracy meant to us. And it was sponsored by the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And she said, look, you all are gonna write to this and one of you might win $100, that's the prize, but it's going to be a grade. So everyone's going to write about what democracy means to you. And so I wrote just like the rest of my classmates did, and I ended up winning. All my friends said it was rigged, but
I
promise I won fair and square.
Your mother, the teacher, would not have done that.
No, definitely not. And so, it was one of those core memory moments for me when I just thought for a second, I just won $100. It took me 4 hours to write this essay. And that's $25 an hour. What else is out there? And so that propelled me all through high school to look for as many scholarships as I could. And I didn't really know what I was doing, except that I grew up with a family that cherished books, that cherished reading out loud, that cherished writing and sharing our writing together, and just really, really harnessing the power of the written word. And so I took that and wrote my applications, sharing life stories and really studying the craft of what does it take to win scholarships, because there is an art to that. Mm-hmm. And I ended up winning over $250,000 by the time
so
I was graduating from high school. And I mean, that was just, it was more money than I thought I would ever, amass in my lifetime at that time in my life. And so it allowed me to go to my dream college, which was Vanderbilt. And I studied special education and specifically deaf and hard of hearing. Mm-hmm. And throughout my coursework, specifically in that world of deaf and hard of hearing, so much focus is on language acquisition because, hearing children, we first learn language auditorily, right? We hear it, our brains kind of shed the ability to hear sounds in other languages and articulate sounds in other languages because our brains are so focused on picking up the sounds of our native language or the ones that we hear. And so I just made so many connections between the explicit steps that I took as a deaf educator and student with deaf children that to writing, right? The connection between teaching deaf children how to speak, how to, if that was in their repertoire of skills, but also even how to sign and how to read the written word. And so just all of those skill sets, I saw such a connection to, wow, these are great writing strategies. Mm-hmm. It breaks sentences down. It takes a look at how phrases come together, how words build phrases. There were just so many amazing connections there. And so fast forward to my first year of teaching. And anytime I talked about writing with my students, they moaned and groaned, even though they were second graders. And I thought, this is not okay. Writing is spectacular. And so it set me on a path to bring in my expertise from what I learned from Vanderbilt and working with deaf and hard of hearing children to working with all kinds of children, all different age levels and grade levels of students, and really just hone in on what makes writing fun and manageable and doable. And And so after teaching for many years and teaching in Spain and South Africa, along with in Mississippi and Oklahoma, I took a huge leap of faith, and I stepped out to start to work with teachers with writing, because I felt such a calling to help teachers across the country learn how to make writing more enjoyable and something that they didn't dread either, that they didn't put at the end of the day, you know,
right.
and never get to. Like, yep. Oops, we just ran out of time to write. And so that has grown over the past 18 years. It just began as, oh, it's Amber's writing. And, you know, and then teachers would say, oh, you know, can we have a binder with all of these strategies that you're sharing? And, oh, you know, we can't quite read your handwriting. So could you make this into a presentation instead of just the, you know, the quick design you drew for us? And can we have this a little bit more, more legible? I'm a lefty. So, shout out to all the lefties who struggle with nice
legibility,
all the spheres and yes, all the fun things. And so, you know, I really didn't know where I was going when I left the classroom, except that I knew there was such a need. And now, writing with design is official. It's got a name to it. We have a tremendous amount of data from schools across the country, literally from coast to coast, from Charleston to San Jose, from pre-K to high school, that just really showcases the power of making writing intentional, and what happens when we streamline the language, when we streamline the approach and create a common framework for what writing looks like, what the different lengths are, what the different structures are, how we talk about narrative versus informational versus argumentative, and just really the incredible untapped skills of students when it comes to writing. So I travel, work with schools all over, doing model lessons. I feel like I've got thousands of students, you know, because I'm in classrooms all the time teaching. And then also, I love to provide professional development for teachers and train them on the strategies in writing with design so that they can bring writing into their classroom with gusto and excitement and relevance.
Yes. Where would they find your resources?
So our website, Writing with Design, talks a lot about how our approach works. It's all science of literacy based. I like to say that. I know science of reading is such a focus right now, as it should be. And I really want to widen that to literacy because writing is such a critical piece of that. So I have certainly pulled in all aspects of science of reading into what we are providing through Writing with Design. And pulled in a tremendous amount of work from the researchers who have been focused on writing, which there are a lot less, but they're still out there and they're incredible. So Steve Graham, for sure, is one that that I credit a lot of the research and the evidence-based pieces to what we offer in Writing with Design. And we have student guides that are resources for students at all grade levels. And that's really the only thing that's a grade level. The rest of our resources are we have a pre-K through first grade teacher binder, I'll say that. And then we have a second through 12th grade teacher binder, because what we found is that the sentence level work that we do with most of our students, with our second through 12th graders, it's really all the same.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can write a high quality sentence in second grade, and you can also write a high quality sentence in AP English your senior year. And what does that look like? What are the strategies? How do transitional words and subordinating clauses and dependent clauses and prepositional phrases, all the components of sentences, how do they come into play? And certainly we adjust complexity for different grade levels. And yet I'll say there's nothing more exciting than hearing a second grader start their sentence with conversely and go into a sentence that shares a difference. So we really didn't want to limit and say, oh, this is a second through fourth grade binder, or this is the middle school binder. No, we wanted it to be a continuum so that school districts, whether it's like Alec, Oklahoma, that's, you know, pre-K through 12th grade has 200 students, or it's a massive district with tens of thousands of students, the language of writing and the expectations can be the same.
Yeah.
So Writing with Design, find in our resources, we have a framework to lay out what are the lengths and structures of writing. And then we launch into the 33 types of writing. Believe it or not, there are 33 different types of writing that we have uncovered by looking at all the different types of academic writing that exist in schools.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to circle back to so many of these things. So Amber and I connected. I always believe you meet the people that you're supposed to meet over your path in life, but we connected because here in Columbia, back in May, we had our first annual Science of Reading conference here in Columbia, and you had called about your school coming. And so we just kind of kept the conversation going because I got so excited when she said she was doing basically science of writing. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, this is what so many people call me and ask, like, do you have anything? What do you do? And both topics, getting teachers to understand all the components of reading and all the components of writing. I mean, those are very big topics. And so I stick in my lane, which is reading. And so I was so excited to find someone who does really great writing work. And we have talked so many times since. And so I'd love for you to talk more deeply about how you see the science of writing work linking to the science of reading work. And when you just said you separate the JK2 or PK1 from the two up, that's exactly what I do in reading, the exact same thing, because there are so many discrete skills in those early years that you really have to get a handle on. So let's talk about that first. What are maybe the steps that these JK, PK, one teachers need to take, and what kinds of things are they looking for? And then we'll transition to the two up. So let's start there. You're working with some JK one teachers and they're thinking about, where do I start for writing? What's the suggestion there?
Yeah, that's it's such a critical time for really setting the trajectory Everything. Of a child's educational success. Yep. You know, I mean, when it is unnerving that we can look at a class of kindergartners and you know, pretty much fortune tell what will happen to them in the rest of schooling. And and so that, you know, unless there are fantastic teachers who
absolutely,
you know, really know what to do. Transform their skill sets. Right.
Yes.
And so when it comes to writing, one of the very first things that I always share with teachers is that students need to be writing every single day. Mm-hmm. Now, not essays and not a tremendous amount, even in our lower grades, but a sentence per day is manageable for every grade level of student. And what does that look like for our youngest learners? Well, that is a phonetic spelling based sentence that is about something that they're studying. I'm a huge believer in tying writing to what are they studying. That ties into Natalie Wexler's work about the knowledge gap and just truly building students' interest in writing on what they're studying. So if it's the beginning of school time and it's about sunflowers or back to school or class materials, whatever the topic is, then that students are reading about, that they've got centers to go to, that there's sensory bins on, then that needs to be the focus of the writing. And I love to encourage our all teachers as they begin writing with students to start with writing to describe, because that follows the oral language development. So when you think about children learning oral language, the first thing they do is they name mommy and daddy, right? And kitty and doggy. And so if we can follow oral language development with written language development, there's a lot of milestones that we can monitor and make sure that students are really grasping the concepts of the written word. And so starting with writing to describe can be something as simple as, let's write about what it felt like to touch the petals of the sunflower, right? Mm-hmm. Or let's write about the color of the petals, right? Would you say that they are lemon yellow, or are they school bus yellow? Just getting that rich vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So the sentence could be something like, sunflower petals are school bus yellow. Mm-hmm. And we have other key pieces to our instructional side of teaching writing in those grade levels, where we first write lines for each of the words. We do that continuous blending where we say the words really slow and draw lines to represent the length of them. So sunflower is going to get a much longer line than petal, right? So we draw out to not only build those phonemic awareness skills, but also to help them think about, gosh, this word has a lot more to it. I need to give myself more space. So we get into the spatial piece of writing, because we all know our littles, you know, they will write starting in the middle of the page and then go to the top and then the bottom.
All over.
So the lines are critically important for that. And then we, in the composition part of writing, this is where, I think I might step on some people's toes, but I firmly believe from the 20 years that I've been working with students, and 20 plus years really in terms of my entire time in education, I think when spelling becomes the critical piece or focus of the writing time, mm-hmm. students shut down mm-hmm. and they feel, I'm not a good writer because they don't know how to spell this.
Right.
And we all know that our listening skills are stronger than our reading skills. Our reading right. skills oftentimes are stronger than our spelling skills. Mm-hmm. And so I don't ever want students to limit their word choice because mm-hmm. I don't know how to spell it
right.
or shut down as a writer because I don't think I can spell enough words.
Right.
So we, in this case, when it is, when it's time to write the sentence, mm-hmm. we encourage teachers to rely on students on helping them figure out the sounds. Mm-hmm. What letters make the sounds of the word? And we walk teachers through getting initial sounds first, mm-hmm. then initial and final sounds, and then initial, prominent, middle, and final sounds. So the odds of the word sunflower being fully spelled out is really small because we want them to hear the sounds and connect those to the what of the phonics code do they own.
Exactly.
And so I know there are some experts out there who believe the opposite, that spelling always should be focused on. And yet I fall more into the area, mm-hmm. More into the line of thought that we, in this case, when the focus is on composition, it's not phonics, it's not spelling, right. it's writing focus,
right.
that we have to let students own the phonics code and not say, well, actually, it's this, because it again overloads them.
Right.
And so once we get the sentence down, then we work on a high detailed picture because, mm-hmm. Just as, you know, Wiley Blevins said, students mm-hmm. can, I mean, he kind of stepped on toes in terms of science of reading piece of, you know, it is okay for students to read a picture when they are under, it's not a crutch. It is them for going sure. more in depth to understanding what the content is, because there are so many great details in pictures. Right. So I firmly believe that we also have to reverse that process of not only reading the picture, mm-hmm. but then creating the picture. Mm-hmm. And that becomes what we ultimately see as supporting details for upper grade students.
Right.
So we aim for what we call a high five picture, where we get five details in the setting and five details in the character or the topic. Right. So not just, you know, did they choose, you know, in terms of shades of yellow, did they choose a shade of yellow that really matched the sunflower? Did they catch that some of the seeds were already developed and some were, you know, still kind of budding out? What are the smaller details that they drew in their picture to really indicate that they are truly thinking about what they're writing mm-hmm. and they're visualizing that content. So that's really kind of several takeaways kind of all told in the instructional process. But yeah, but just phonetic spelling is huge.
Yeah.
Pick high quality picture and then spacing it out and making it a group, right? So this is collective. Mm-hmm. It's not silent and alone. Everyone is right. all together. They've got their writing paper with the teacher, and the teacher is more the scribe. They are right. not guiding this. They are taking their ideas. Oh, that's a great word. Oh, I mm-hmm. love that you are going to change out, instead of, you know, school bus yellow, mm-hmm. you want to do lemon yellow mm-hmm. or Chinese lantern yellow. Mm-hmm. Great. You can give them options for that voice through structured choice, right? They right. see their different choices. They get to choose which one and pull it in.
Oh my goodness. Okay. My mind was going so many different directions right then. So I love the application of the phonological awareness, because I think that has in some ways become like a siloed time. And I think that we've taken a step and that we're doing it, which is really great. And we're seeing it in more and more classrooms, but it is ultimately the connection to writing that they have to be able to do. I'm going to take this and use this like next week when the kids come. The line of how long is the word that you're hearing and how am I going to make that line? That is such a great transition in early years to say some words are longer, some words are shorter, and how are you hearing the syllable types and all those things. But then when they get older, they have to break into those syllable types to be able to figure out how to spell, right? So I love that. I think every teacher should start doing that next week or this week, whenever your kids hit the door for your classroom. So if I'm hearing the word, then I'm actually physically drawing it. I think that alone could make some really big changes with some of these kids. And I agree. It really does. It does. Oh my gosh.
One extension into upper grade students uh-huh. with that is if the magic is the baton getting passed
yes.
from students
yes.
who start with writing design in the lower grade and move up.
Yeah.
And so I love when teachers share, you know, I ask teachers, just text me, just email. I want to see what's going on in your classroom. And I love getting pictures of students writing where mm-hmm. there's a line drawn.
Yes.
And it's because they know the word. Yeah. They know the word they want to say. They're not quite sure on spelling. They get, you know, maybe the first sound and the final sound, yep. but they've got it anchored for them, yep. but they want to consult with the teacher on spelling yep. and get more support on that. But it doesn't stop them. Yes. It doesn't stop
they
them
just
from
keep
writing.
Going.
And that is such a game changer that they're okay. Yes. Yeah, spelling's a part. I get it. Yeah. And I know what I want to say and I'm going to
sure.
keep going.
Absolutely. And it gives insight to the teacher if they know what they're looking for, right? So I always tell teachers, you know, whether or not it's spelled right at this point, you know, whatever, but do they have the beginning sound? Do they have the middle? Are some of the letters in between even in the right space? And if they are, great. I mean, that lets you see inside their brain. They're saying the word, they're taking it apart, and they're applying it. Like that to me is magical for a teacher to be able to see that the instruction is transferring over into what's actually being learned. So I think that's just so great. I love that so much. So then the connection that we've seen, what you just said, is all of the early foundational skills being transferred over into writing. So when teachers say, you know, how can I mesh these two worlds together? Well, you just did it beautifully. So if you're teaching, if you've done your time with some phonological, you've done your letter sound correspondence work and you're taking it all into writing, all of that is just looping together all the time. And it's not this individual time of the day for everything. It's just science of reading, science of writing, all wrapped into one. Oh my goodness. I love that. Okay. So we've got our early learners. They're starting with obviously the rich read alouds, which is still very important. You're getting all that vocabulary, how to tell a story, what to pick out, how to do sentences. So that's a part of what they're doing, right? They're putting it in
there. Yeah. Well, and one other tip, honestly, one other tip for all grade levels is to start with informational writing. And I don't mean for the first 3 months of school.
Sure.
But one of the things, when I've gone into a lot of districts that have units of study mm-hmm. Or writer's workshop, mm-hmm. And I think across the nation, narrative became, oh, it's easiest because it's about children's lives. And they, no, narrative is the hardest type of writing to do because it's not a natural way for us to communicate. We're much more in reality, in the moment, sharing information mm-hmm. is the easiest. And so that ties and resonates beautifully with again, the knowledge gap piece of, we just need to focus on teaching content and writing is such a fabulous way of having students explore content, mm-hmm. understand it, mm-hmm. and really grapple with it by doing informational writing. So we always encourage teachers, whatever you're studying, sunflowers or bats or the American Revolution, whatever content, whatever grade level, start with informational writing. Mm-hmm. Now, this doesn't have to be, again, a long piece of writing. Even in our upper grades and into high school, we love short answer responses because that is a lot of what we write day in and day out. It's not long essays, right? And so we really focus in on those 1 to 5 sentence response links. Okay. And then from there, teachers can think about branching into argumentative or opinion mm-hmm. writing for our lower grades and or then into narrative. So we teach ION for the pre-K through first grade. So it's informational, opinion, the narrative. Those are the three in terms of the order of difficulty and also the progression that really lets students first learn the content. Then they get to grapple and make a choice, right? Mm-hmm. Do I want this one or this one? And we always encourage teachers, don't say what's your favorite mm-hmm. flower or what's your favorite kind of wide open response. Give them two choices so that they've got this or this. Mm-hmm. And it really allows for teachers to really still teach writing and not have so many topics going around that they can't handle what
too
every
much.
Student's choosing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then lastly, there's narrative, because there is such an art. Narrative is not about action. It's mm-hmm. about experience. Mm-hmm. It's about feeling like we're either watching it mm-hmm. or we are there as the character of the mm-hmm. of the story. And so we save that for the last, again, not the last 3 months of the school year, but the last, and maybe this is over a 2-week unit, right? Mm-hmm. But we save it for the last part because students have to own so much information and truly be critical thinkers of it before they can weave it magically into a narrative, mm-hmm. as well as learning all the narrative strategies of character reflection and how do I use monologue and what does my ending look like? And you know, we have all these off limits endings, for example. We call them burnt crust endings, kind of like, you know, the last bite of pizza that you eat. If it, you know, if your whole piece of pizza was delicious, but the last bite you didn't realize was nothing but burnt crust, that's the taste that stays sticks with you for, from your piece of pizza. And so it's the same kind of thing when we get to the end of students' writings or narratives. I mean, any type of writing, but narrative, we find it a lot of, they'll say things like, and then I went to bed, or, and then I woke up. No, it's a burnt crust ending. And so for informational, thank you for reading, or that's all I've got to say about dolphins. So we love to, to work on all the craftsman parts of writing, but specifically within the styles of it, we have different strategies that help address that. And narrative is the one that I feel teachers feel, gosh, they should be good at this. I should be good at this. And I'm just here to say it is the hardest type across the board. It is the hardest.
I think lots of people are applauding you right now for saying that. I agree. It's very hard. Okay. So awesome information, PK1. So let's think about two up. What is your best piece of advice for those teachers falling in those categories?
Yeah. First of all, length never equals strength.
I love that.
Or maybe I'll say length rarely equals strength, or does not equal. And most of the time, length does not equal strength. Meaning, students equate that if I can fill up a page, I'm a better writer than the one over there who can't. And that's completely inaccurate. When I first started working on these strategies with students, I had a student come in to class one day. She's a third grader, and she was so excited. She said, "Miss Parks, I wrote all weekend long. You're going to be so proud of me. I love writing now, and I just wrote." And I elated until I started looking at her work, and she was so proud. So I wrote 3 pages, and it was sadly nothing but fluff. Meaning it was a story about recess, and it started with, "I said hi and she said hi. I said, do you want to go to the swing? She said, yes. I said, do you want to go on the slide? She said, sure." It was back and forth like that through the entire 3 pages. And so that was the moment that I started to think about, how can we start to switch the mental script that students have about what it means to be a good writer? Because we all know this, but when we're on social media, we just scroll and we might read, if it's a super long post, we might go completely over it, or we might just read the first sentence of each of the paragraphs and kind of see if it catches our attention a little bit more. And, you know, and that truly speaks to the art of brevity, and that there's such power at the sentence level that we don't need to always be reaching for those essay levels. So that's my first always piece of advice and recommendation for teachers of second through 12th grade, is let length be something that you don't worry about, you don't focus on, except to flip it and say, look, I'm only letting you write 2 sentences on this. I am a busy teacher. I've got 125 pieces to read, right? From all my ELA classes or all my science classes. I have 125 students. I don't have time to read 10 sentences from each of you. You only get 2. So I want you to tell me, what did you take away from our study of plant cells and animal cells in 2 sentences? Tell me 2 big takeaways with complex sentence structures. That is such a fun kind of flip for students to think, oh, I only get 2 sentences. And I joked with my students, but I was pretty serious. I said, if you write 3, I am not reading them. I will not read past 2 sentences, because I want you to value the way that you are structuring your sentence and not just fill up a page. And so I would get much more complex sentence structures because they would brainstorm all their ideas. We have a brainstorming design that we use, and teachers are familiar with this design. It's called brainstorming web a lot of times, but it's just, we put a box in the middle with the topic. We have lines coming out with bubbles with all of their ideas, but a lot of times that's it. It kind of gets left there. And then we go to like an outline for a writing, and we are all about kind of visualizing writing through our 9 mind designs that are tied to thought processes. So from that brainstorming design, for example, students would color code. They would circle the bubbles that went together. They would draw lines to get 2 different ones that went together. They might even number them, which ones go together. And it helped them create these much more complex sentences. So that's huge. Tip number one is make length the least important factor and really flip the script for your students and make the writings much shorter. 1 sentence, 2 sentences. Because if students are not writing strong sentences, They will not write strong paragraphs, and they certainly will not write strong essays. Mm-hmm. And that just makes the teaching load mm-hmm. so overwhelming for mm-hmm. teachers, because when they get essays from students and it's I said hi, she said hi, I said yeah. swing, she said sure. It's so overwhelming to know where to start.
Right.
That if you've got just 2, 3, 4 sentences from a student in the class, you can say, oh, I'm really seeing that they are struggling with this key concept or this part of writing. And it lets you very easily make that the writing instructional focus moving forward.
Okay. So that's tip number one. What's the next thing for
tip
these
number
guys?
One, yes. Yeah. Tip number two is to be really intentional with the type of writing. So mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier, there's 33 types of writing that we teach in writing with design. Now, that does not mean within one school year. Sure. That does not mean it's on one teacher's shoulders. This is looking at the pre-K through 12th grade continuum of education. What are the types of writings that students are asked to do? And so, for example, when we delve into informational writing, that's not enough. That's a domain. I like everyone to kind of think about that as an umbrella, right? It's huge, mm-hmm. right? It's great to say, oh, we're doing informational writing. Okay, perfect. Right. But what type of informational writing? Mm-hmm. Are we doing a writing to describe? Are we doing a writing to classify, where we might have a paragraph about plant cells and then a paragraph about animal cells, for example? Or, you know, another one to kind of think about would be kind of looking at different influential moments in American history. Just classify 3 moments and let's write about what happened in those 3 moments. So mm-hmm. just the classification is all about sorting and organizing information. We might do writing to compare, right? Writing to show cause or effect. Mm-hmm. I like to separate those out because they are different. And while there might be some causal connection between causes and two effects, it's a lot for students to write about cause and effect. So we center on a moment and we look at either the causes of why it happened or we look at the effects of what happened after. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, that's just even a few short ones. Summarizing and paraphrasing would be another one. So there's just under the umbrella of informational, there's multiple types. And so what we work with teachers on is just being very explicit. What type of writing are you wanting students to mm-hmm. do? On the topic.
Right.
And so the prompts become really important to really clarify we're doing writing to compare. I want to know the similarities and differences mm-hmm. between what we're studying right now. And that helps students be very clear on, okay, I get what I'm supposed to do. And it also helps them dissect the prompts. So when they get to state assessments, you know, yes. the worst feeling is to know,
I know
they wrote a narrative when it was asking for an argumentative yes. piece. And so by dissecting prompts and having students really figure out what's helping me know what to do in this. We're setting them up to be successful writers across the board and certainly on those assessments that
right.
they all unfortunately or fortunately have to take, depending on yeah. which ones and what grade levels.
I know. Yeah. It's third here. They start with a writing prompt, but it is overwhelming. It's overwhelming for them. So that was great advice. So we've got the first two tips, the third one for these grade levels. What do you think?
It's really about transitional words. Mm-hmm. So we talked a minute ago about complex sentences and the power that you can give to complex sentences mm-hmm. when you make shorter writings the focus. But what's one way to do that? Mm-hmm. Well, I love to focus in on transitional words and phrases. Mm-hmm. And we have lists of transitional words and phrases at the emerging, developing, and established levels because as I mentioned earlier, our binders go 2nd to 12th. Mm-hmm. And that is really intentional as a former special education teacher, as a writer myself. You know, if something's new to me, it doesn't matter my age. I need to still have a resource that's accessible to me. And then I can grow my skills as I get comfortable right. with kind of round one of the skill. So that's why we intentionally chose emerging. Doesn't mean bless your heart. It doesn't mean, you know, that it's the easy resource. We designed it to be the most accessible resource when we think about our English language learners,
yeah.
when we think about students who are striving readers and writers, just to not overwhelm them with 100 choices when 3 choices is empowering and I still get to make a choice.
Yes.
You know, that the emerging resources are, I like to say students can score all the points on all our rubrics with just the emerging resources in every
wow.
grade. So
that's awesome.
It's not, again, that they're kind of an easy resource. They're just the most accessible. They're the words that don't have the connotations that, well, that one doesn't quite fit here.
Right.
So the transitions, we have a list, emerging, developing, and established list of transitions.
Okay.
And I really encourage teachers to take a look at where they can insert transitional words and phrases and work on getting away from the megaphone ones, which those are first, then next, last, finally, to summarize, to conclude. The ones that really you can just imagine someone blaring into a megaphone, first, second, finally. Oh right? It's too obvious. It's too obnoxious in the writing. And so we love to teach the more subtle transitional words and phrases, because through our internal research of looking at writing samples for 18 years across the country, so thousands of writing samples that we've gotten back from districts in terms of their assessments they've done, from state and national assessments. I've been a score for state and national assessments. I've also sat on scholarship committees to pull in and find finalists for scholarships.
Right.
What we have determined is that there is a transitional word or phrase in nearly every single sentence of high scoring writing.
Wow.
And those are phrases like, you know, after 15 minutes, or once I awoke, or conversely, or on the other hand, or after more analysis. The much more subtle transitions that most people, as they're reading, they just think, wow, this is a really impressive piece. Mm-hmm. But if we break down to the structural piece, they are subordinate clauses, they are prepositional phrases, they are adverbial clauses, they are the parts of a sentence that really add complexity.
Yeah, but makes it flow and makes it sound like a great piece of writing. Yeah. Okay, that's fantastic. So I feel like everyone should just run to your website right now. Get the resources, call you, have you in, and make writing fun again. I think writing, you know, it's scary for teachers. It's a little daunting. They feel like they're not sure how to do it. They can't grasp it. And it's because it feels big. You know, you took a lot of really big concepts and made them very concrete and simple for teachers to go in and use. And I believe that's what they're all looking for. Amazing.
Yeah, we know the why. I mean, every single teacher knows why writing's important. Yep. We are 100% in agreement that it matters. It's a life skill, it's a civic skill, it's an academic skill. Mm-hmm. And yet the how is the part that all kind of catches us. Well, this is what I've tried, or I just had an email this morning from a teacher who is wanting to have some work in her district. And she said, you know, I feel totally prepared to teach everything else, but writing, I don't know what to do. And I think that stems a lot from the way that it is put out into a lot of educational material, where there'll be these fantastic stories to read or informational texts and all these great reading comprehension questions there. And then there'll just be a writing prompt and that's it. And, you know, if we equate that to other subjects, you know, none of us would ever ask students, okay, I just want you to get out a sheet of paper and I just want you to math. You can math about anything you want, just math.
What?
Be creative.
No one would do that. Yes.
You can math about the weekend, right? And, you know, and when we put it that way, we think, yeah, they would look at me like, what are you talking about? I have no idea what to math about. Uh-huh. And that's exactly what we do with writing, right? We just give these prompts and we expect students to then be able to pull from their experiences and just write, you know, just get out, just start on the top line and just write. And I really am under the firm belief from all the research that's been done that writing takes explicit instruction.
Yes.
And that's where Writing with Design comes in. It's a framework. It's a step-by-step guide for teachers. We lay out the steps to completing all of those 33 types of writing at different levels. So one other key piece of our strategy for writing our framework is that we have 10 levels of writing. A level one is a one sentence piece, and it progresses through numbers of sentences and then structure. Mm-hmm. So for example, we do a short answer response that has a closing sentence as one of our levels. It's level four. Mm-hmm. And that's a weird one because it doesn't have an opening sentence. But a lot of times when you're doing short answer responses, you don't need that quote unquote opening sentence. You just need to give some details and then you need some kind of wrap up and take away what is the essence of what I'm sharing with you. Mm-hmm. So that four sentence response is one of our favorites to teach because it is so applicable across the board. Mm-hmm. But we go all the way to level 10, which is that multi-paragraph essay that, you know, is the academic goal for students to be able to do. And having that as just another way to refer to writing, it helps teachers know how to talk about writing, how to set students up to be successful with it, and then give them the structures, give them the mind designs, which are visual structures for how to set up writing, that really helps them know what I need to do. How many sentences do I need? Yeah. And not as an arbitrary, well, how many do you think? Or right. fill up the page.
Right.
But it's really, okay, let's talk about this. Do we feel this is a two sentence response or does this need two paragraphs? Where right. are we with the length that we feel would justify a solid answer? So mm-hmm. writing with design is all about giving teachers the instructional framework, the strategies, and quite frankly, the knowledge of yes. how do I actually teach students to write so that they can be really proud of how they integrate writing into the curriculum across the board. So yes. we love seeing writing sprinkled in throughout the day
yep.
And not this block
not
of time
that's time.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And put
totally agree.
Somewhere.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So this is the year of writing. Let's just declare that 2023-24, yeah. the year of writing. I love it. So they can find your website, writingwithdesign.com?
Yes.
Yes. Awesome.
Yeah. We're the owl. You're on the right site when you see our owl, which stems from my very first year of teaching back in Alec when I rescued an owl on my way home one day from work. And I thought, you know what? That's just the perfect symbol for what it takes to be a great writer. Because, you know, writing is thinking on paper. And yes. when we put such reverence on it as that, uh-huh. then it really changes the focus of, oh, it's not just one more thing to do. It's not right. just, oh, this is great just because you wrote. It really helps teachers and students think about how do I want to share what I'm thinking in my brain about this topic. Mm-hmm. And that I believe it deserves that reverence mm-hmm. Because of just what it sets students up to be able to do in terms of critical thinking skills, mm-hmm. in terms of being great comprehenders of text and to be quite frankly, just successful in life, to be able to really analyze deeply information, no matter the field or profession they go into.
Right. I love it. Okay. So you can find her information there. Ms. Amber Parks, thank you so very much for making this happen. I can't wait to continue our journey to see what's next. And, I know that the teachers have gotten so much out of this today. So thank you all for joining us. We appreciate you and we will see you next time. Thanks so much.